powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Kings Heating and Air. How did we get here? That is a question that the Seahawks are certainly asking themselves, and Seahawks fans are also asking themselves. After the loss to the Washington football team on Monday sent the Seahawks to 3-8, last place, not just in the division, but at the bottom looking up in the NFC as a whole, it's not familiar territory for the Seahawks, at least in the last 10 years. They've been one of the winningest teams under Pete Carroll, who's been the winningest head coach with Seattle in franchise history. And also, they've never had a losing season with Russell Wilson under center. And now they're almost assured of that. They can still win out, but almost assured of having their very first losing season. Now, there are some more benign reasons you can point to when you look at the fault of this, right? You can look at injury. You had Russell Wilson miss a month with a jacked up finger. And he came back, and guess what? It still looks like a problem because he is throwing high and not on target. You've had Chris Carson. He's done for the year. He had to have surgery to have a disc fusion in his neck. It sounds like he could return to play next year. It's not the same injury suffered by Cam Chancellor and Cliff Avril, but he's certainly done for this year. And you don't have anyone else as talented as Chris Carson. That's not a slight on Alex Collins or anyone else in that room, but Chris Carson's that great. I stand by the fact that he's one of the most underrated running backs in this league when he's healthy. Key part being that second half of it. Mm-hmm. You had your top pick in the draft miss, weeks what, 2 through 8, 9 for you after suffering a concussion. So you've had a lot of reasons where you can look at it. And if you were a very pragmatic person, a very calm person, a very rational person, it just goes one day at a time, one year at a time. You look at it and you say, I'm not that panicked. This is a team that was 12-4 a year ago. They've made improvements on defense. They've had some injuries on offense. It is what it is.
Yeah, but I wouldn't count that as rational. I would count that as putting your head in the sand. Right. That's what I would say.
Okay.
Because I don't think that's a clear, accurate depiction as to what has happened.
Nor do I, but
I think you could say that, sure. There are excuses and there are challenges that you have had this season. Most teams, most good teams, they're able to overcome that. I mean, look at the Green Bay Packers, for example, watching them play against the Los Angeles Rams. I mean, the Green Bay Packers are down and have injuries at their cornerback spot. And yet, despite that, they have a corner who steps in Rasul Douglas, who is a backup. And he comes in, he plays extremely well. Plays extremely well. Why? Because you have depth. Because that player is a 2017 third-round pick who was from Philadelphia that you picked up in the offseason, and you found a way to make him work on your team, right? You have good quality depth that is stepping up and rising to the occasion. And for the Seattle Seahawks, that has not been the case. And, you know, when you're down and Damian Lewis and that player is hurt, who do you turn to? Well, you've got Kyle Fuller that you're going to turn to and make him play left guard and watch him just get absolutely worked against one of the better defensive tackle combinations in the NFL. And, you know, that's the kind of depth that you have. Now you look at the Seahawks in terms of their cornerback spot, in terms of pass rushing depth. I mean, you're not getting any production hardly ever out of those guys. And so, yeah, you're in some challenging spots with players and injuries, but the depth that you have on this roster because of the misses you've had in the draft and your free agent acquisitions are really the real reason why you're in this position.
Well, that's what I look at, too. I mean, I look at it is not a 100% drafting situation. I think that what it is, in my opinion, is Russell Wilson is struggling and honestly has been struggling since, like, against Buffalo last year, since about week 9 of last year. He has not been consistent. He's had some great moments since then, some good moments, some good games, but hasn't been a model of consistency the way he was in the first 9.5 years of his career. However, I think maybe what's happened is you have a quarterback who can no longer mask misses that you've had with talent acquisition. That's not to say you don't have talent around him. DK is incredibly talented. Tyler's incredibly talented. Bobby Wagner is incredibly talented. I would even say Jamal Adams, and I know people don't love that trade, is incredibly talented. But you've had a lot of draft misses. Guys that are no longer with this team. Guys that didn't enter into a second contract with this team. And it's not for a lack of money to spend. It's because the team was not interested in bringing that player back. And I think that when you have that happen for a number of years in a row, it catches up to you. And some of those are, I don't even know if the draft misses so much as they are bad luck. Marquise Blair, like I know for a fact this team's very excited about Marquise Blair. But you know what else has happened? He's had two back-to-back season-ending injuries. That's just bad luck.
Yeah, but I agree, but it's happened way too often.
But that's what I'm saying is...
If it's just in a vacuum, then yeah, okay.
Right, right. What I'm saying is you've had multiple issues within talent acquisition, whether it's bad luck with injuries, whether it's getting someone that's not a good fit, or whether it's getting someone who could be a good fit that you don't use correctly, like Jamal Adams and more acutely, Jimmy Graham.
Yeah, you just go through the years, right? You go through the years, and you're right. I mean, Russell Wilson for a long time has been masking a lot of the issues, a lot of the problems, and I would say that he has been masking a lot of the issues when it comes to 2016, 2017, and beyond with the offensive line and poor pass protection. The other thing I would say, though, is that through those years, they had a decent running game. I mean, you look at 2018, 2019, Chris Carson was back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. In terms of rushing the football. And now you're at a point where you are at a crossroads in terms of what you're going to do personnel-wise to fit what you have or philosophy-wise to fit your personnel. And instead of going in that direction of bending towards what you have personnel-wise to change philosophically what you want to do, you are sticking very firm to a certain philosophy and ideology. And you do not have the personnel to make that work. So you look back at this last game, Stacey, and Pete Carroll goes, well, we got to run the ball better. Well, we need more rushing attempts. In theory, sure. But you're also still being effective in play action pass despite not having that. So that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And then the other part of it is that your running game isn't good. It's not good. So what are you doing to lean into the strengths that you have or to try and fix the problems that you're currently working with? How are you trying to help this run game be functional, right? Instead of just saying, well, we just got to be better there.
What should they be doing?
I mean, I think that instead of lining up in 12 personnel and trying to run the ball in between the tackles at the teeth of the defense for Washington and these two great defensive tackles and watch Ethan Posick and Kyle Fuller get ragdolled all game, spread it out, change it, run more on the edge. I mean, there's other things that you could be doing
like
to try and help. I didn't say screen passes. I'm talking about run game specifically. And sure, yeah, how about you run a screen and try to do one effectively? That would be great. That would be fantastic. But that is not what happened. And so your strategy in terms of how you ran the ball and how you tried to attack them wasn't good. And then just simply saying that, well, we would have been better if we would have had 20 more attempts or we would have had 10 more attempts, Stacey, our run game would have been significantly better. On what evidence? Because when I watched the film, I didn't see that. So that's the part where a lot of this is just disconnected to me.
Yeah, it's the worst part is not necessarily because of heavy impact, although it is pretty impactful, Russell Wilson struggles, because it's one thing to have struggles around him that he can't mask. It's another thing when he is struggling.
Right.
And I don't think moving on from Russell Wilson is the right decision, but that almost makes it a tougher situation to be in, because you're like, well, then how do you get right?
I don't think so. I think the question that goes around it, and here's what it fundamentally comes down to. Do you believe Russell Wilson is still a franchise quarterback? That's the question. Whatever the answer is, you have your answer. So, and how you need to proceed moving forward. So if it is yes, then the answer is that you have to do everything you can to figure out what is the best solution to help him and make him better. And find out what that answer is and address it this offseason. If the answer is no, then right now, if either conform to the philosophical belief that we have, that I believe in as Pete Carroll, as the way to win football games, or we need to move on. It's as simple as that. And so you proceed, with that in mind. It comes down to that. And so I think that that part of it is really the fundamental question that you ask yourself. And it's just unfortunate that we're in this position because, you know, Stacey, you know, turning it over to the Jamal Adams situation, you add a player like Jamal Adams, you give up two first-round picks and change because you feel like you're adding to a team, or at least everybody on the outside, media, myself included, the fan base, you're hoping that that move is a sign of, man, they really believe that they're right there and that this move can take them over the top. And roster-wise, that's just not where they were.
Well, what's weird is that it's not because Jamal Adams isn't talented. I think it's more of the nature of the position and the nature of how a certain position over others can impact an entire roster. For instance, I don't know that there are that many positions outside of quarterback where you can trade two first-rounders and it makes you a Super Bowl team because of that player.
Right.
And that's not because I don't think Jamal Adams is perfectly capable and talented. It's because look at Chicago, who traded two first-rounders for Khalil Mack. I know he's done for this season, and so this feels unfair. But they have so many other problems outside of that defense, which was great, especially when he first got there.
Yeah, I mean, they were awesome for a long time.
He's been so good with Chicago, so good with them. And it hasn't been enough to make them a Super Bowl team, because the nature of the position, he played defensive end, not as impactful as quarterback.
Exactly. Not as
impactful
of quarterback.
Who knows if Matthew Stafford can do that for the Rams?
They miss out on Mitchell Trubisky, who they take on the first round. They pass up Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, and they've got this great defense that can absolutely be a championship caliber defense. But what have they been doing? They've been searching for a quarterback. They've been searching for offense. An offense that can, you know, carry the weight of what the defense was doing in Chicago, and they're still trying to do that right now. And now they're on their second high round pick in Justin Fields, and we'll see if they're able to when they fire Matt Nagy, and let's see if they can figure out how to build something around Justin Fields. But I mean, that is the position that the Seahawks are not in. They do have the quarterback, they have that guy, and so now how do you build the roster to help him be better and use the talent that you do have to collectively make this thing come together? 3-8, I mean, you got to answer a lot of those questions, and I think that this part of it is such a unique conversation because there are so many factors and so many ways that you can go with this.
It's a question and a conversation we'll certainly be getting back to many times. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Kings Heating and Air. Let's get to four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake. Is Russell Wilson's finger the biggest reason this offense is struggling right now?
No, it's not. And I don't think the finger is an issue for him. I mean, I said this yesterday, but if Russell and Pete aren't going to use that as an excuse and they're adamant, and especially Russell Wilson adamant that it's not a problem, then okay, it's not a problem. But what I would say is that, yeah, Russell is struggling and that is obvious. But the main real issue that is going on with this offense right now is the offensive line. You don't have a run game. You could point to Chris Carson being out, but I don't even think Chris Carson would have a great time running the football right now with this offensive line the way that they're playing. The pass protection has been brutal throughout the year. I mean, you watch the tape from this last game against Washington, Stacey. I mean, it is brutal, absolutely brutal. And that, to me, is when you have a philosophy like Pete Carroll and you want to run the football. And Pete Carroll, after the game, says, hey, we've got to run the football. We got to get more chances to run the football. It wouldn't have mattered. They got dominated in the trenches all game long. It doesn't matter the attempts. And when you're in between as an offense, and when you have a quarterback that's struggling, when you have all those things, a run game and to be able to counterbalance some of those issues would absolutely help. And having good, solid protection would help a quarterback that's struggling in those situations. And I think that is something that, as you point to, that has been the biggest shock and surprise to me as to how poor the offensive line has played this season. So, I mean, I think that that is a huge struggle for them right now, because even if they wanted to get away from throwing the ball more with Russell Wilson because he's struggling, which I don't think is what they're going to do, but let's just say even if they wanted to and they wanted to get to the run game, I don't, they're not good enough to do that.
Second down. All right.
Turn your mic on, Ross.
I got it. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, who has the best chance to get to a Super Bowl this year?
So this is a fun question, because Tom Brady obviously has a bevy of weapons offensively. He is the guy that, I mean, he's Tom Brady, right? When it comes to crunch time, when it comes to playoff time, I mean, he is the GOAT. He's the greatest of all time, and you can never count out Tom Brady. However, I think it's Aaron Rodgers' turn. I think it's Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers have the best chance to get to the Super Bowl this year. And despite the injuries that they have dealt with and they have gone through on the defensive side of the ball, and losing, you know, Tonyan and Aaron Jones has been out for a few weeks, Green Bay Packers find a way to win. And sometimes they find a way to win that isn't pretty. Sometimes they generate a whole bunch of points and are able to put it on teams. I mean, this is a team that I see that just has everything going for them. They've got the quarterback, they've got the offense, they've got the running game, the defense is really coming alive, and they don't even have their best corner out there who might be available when it comes towards later in the year in December, Stacey, and for the playoffs, Jair Alexander. I think the Green Bay Packers are the best team set up right now in the NFC to get to the Super Bowl.
Third down. All right, what do you make of Jake Haener coming back here to kick off Kalen DeBoer's first season as head coach?
Bold strategy, Cotton. I mean,
see if it pays off.
At that point, you would have to see if it pays off. Now, with Kalen DeBoer, if he brings in Jake Haener, I'm just telling you right now that Jake Haener will come in here. He'll be the starter. And I honestly think that it'll be just fine with the team that year. The question is, what happens after that? If Sam Heward left, if Dylan Morris left, I mean, I don't know. Right? And so that is the controversy that you get yourself into in year one with that potential, you know, move with Jake Haener coming back. And to be honest with you, I fully expect that to happen. I don't think Jake Haener hit the transfer portal and did not eye Washington in that reunion with his coach. I mean, if I'm him, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I know that offense. I've been very successful in it. I know the University of Washington was there for multiple years. So a reunion makes a ton of sense, but it will bring drama to Montlake, and I will be curious how that is handled and what the ramifications are for that. But if I'm Kalen DeBoer, at the same time, I want to make sure year one's successful, and having a quarterback that I know extremely well and know his strengths and weaknesses and how to get the best out of him, I could definitely see why he would lean on that decision.
Fourth down. When it comes to the Seahawks defense, what's one stat that means a lot and another that doesn't mean much at all?
One stat that means a lot, but I do think that you look at in a vacuum right now and is being thrown around in a vacuum is the Seahawks defense on third downs. And that being pointed to as the main reason why this defense has fully turned and there shouldn't be any criticisms of the defense and they're fine and everything's good. I don't think so. What I think right now is going on is that the defense is playing significantly better, and that the defense is also not the biggest problem by a long shot for this team. So they look better. They don't draw as much criticism right now. But if you go and look at their first and second down production defensively, it is way at the bottom of the charts. And so what that means is that teams are driving on you. Teams are being very productive on first and second down. Teams are moving at will. And yes, if you're able to limit them to field goals and not touchdowns, ultimately that's what matters. But when it comes to time of possession and that issue, and it comes to a lot of other things, I think over time it wears you down. And defensively, the style that you play ends up hurting you, not helping you. So you start wearing yourself down as well. There's not any help that you're giving yourself in that circumstance. So anyways, it's more of an offensive issue in time of possession. It's more of an offensive issue why the defense is getting worn down the second half. But when you watch the game versus Washington, I don't know how you come away necessarily and say that the defense is playing perfect and should avoid all criticism. They played admirably. They did a lot of great things, Stacey. I'm not ripping on the defense by any stretch. But I've seen a lot of the conversation of, well, here they're playing really well. They're playing perfect. They're, you know, it's almost like they should be avoided. There should be void of criticism for the defense, and I just don't think that's true.
That was four down territory. Now, I want to get back to a little more UW football. We spoke with Mike Burrell of the Seattle Times. Again, if you missed that, make sure you listen to the Jake and Stacey podcast. He was on for Washington Wednesday. Good stuff, as always, from Mike. But we asked him specifically about Jake Haener. What does Jake Haener entering the transfer portal mean for Washington, whether or not he transfers there, if that's going to impact that? And more importantly and secondarily, what does it mean for Sam Heward? Right? What is this quarterback battle that you're looking at right now? And Jake, that was a question that you just answered for four down territory, but I want to get back to it specifically, you know, what kind of drama it might cause and how you avoid that on Montlake for the tenure of DeBoer. It's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
I want to get to this Washington quarterback topic, Jake. But before I do that, I've got some hot stove news. The stove is heating up. It's in someone else's kitchen, though. So sorry about that.
Okay.
From Jeff Passan of ESPN, we talked about the possibility of Chris Taylor potentially returning to Seattle, and it seemed like it might be a long shot. But, hey, you know, you never know. It could happen. Jeff Passan says that the Dodgers and Taylor are making progress on a deal, and it is expected to be completed today. So he stays with L.A.
Okay, so
presumably
he stays with L.A., so then that makes the market shrink just a little bit more.
Yeah, it wasn't a big name that had been linked, or even the primary one we talked about today, those two being Chris Bryant and Trevor Story, but
right.
It was one that we had previously talked about. So.
Okay, so I'm going to call an audible midway through this thing, because Stacey, the Mariners, this is going to be the last time we get a chance to talk about it, because before the deadline, and I want them so badly to sign either Chris Bryant or Trevor Story before this thing wraps up. I mean, the lockout, what it would do for you, I think, would be incredibly impactful. Is one, again, another statement that you're making along with the signing of Robbie Ray and trading for Adam Frazier and all that, but it just lessens the burden on what the Mariners have to do and what they have to get done after the lockout is over. And who knows what the landscape of everything's going to look like with the lockout over. I mean, it's not like it's going to be, you know, futuristic. We're going to go into the future and be like, what? Like, I don't even recognize this place anymore. I mean, the landscape will be somewhat the same, but the suitors, the competitors could be different. The outlook could change for the particular players that the Mariners are interested in. And then you have no idea about the trades and the conversations that can go down. So wouldn't it be great for the Mariners to at least be able to have that one impact bat signed, locked, sealed, signed, sealed, delivered before you head into potentially months of a lockout?
Yeah, because if I'm talking about the moves themselves, signing Robbie Ray is huge. It's huge. It takes so much of that weight off of your shoulders to get something done immediately. And you were rightfully so facing a lot of pressure, and also rightfully so facing a lot of doubt as to whether or not you'd actually do that. This is an organization that, I don't need to tell you guys, has not been successful, has not made it to the postseason for 20 years. And so, yeah, people are going to be doubting that you can do it and doubting that you're serious about things. I feel like you've earned fan doubt, and hopefully you earn fan excitement, because there was certainly a lot of that last year. I was excited about it. I think you're right. I was just about to say, you know, Jake, I don't want to be looking a gift horse in the mouth. I'm pretty happy with the addition of Ray, and if you can't get something done before the deadline, I can't. What can the Mariners do if a guy like Chris Bryant is saying, I'm not signing until this new CBA is done? I'm not doing anything. I don't care how much you offer me. That's out of their control. They're in a weird situation. But I do worry about the offense. Like, I do worry about what you're looking at on paper heading out of last year and what you have on paper this year, which is you added Frazier.
Yeah. It is. And, you know, go to cut number one here, Curtis. Jerry DePoto talking about how there's still a chance to get it done, a deal done today. They're not done.
We can absolutely do deals. And we're still approaching this as if, you know, today is another business day. And, you know, we've got our hands in a couple of different trade talks, and we're still engaged with a few free agents. And, you know, I can't say one way or the other whether we will get anything done, but I also wouldn't say it's impossible.
So, I mean, hey, not impossible. It can't happen. Might not happen. But they're working on it. And I do legitimately feel that way. And look, hear what they know they need to add next. Here, cut number two. Jerry DePoto's saying, look, impact bat's part of that.
You know, we want to add the one more bat and minimally one more bat. We think there's potentially room for two, but, you know, it depends on where that bat lies. And now we have the flexibility of focusing on the offensive impact, wherever that might land. And that's what the Adam Frazier acquisition really does for us. We would like to continue to add depth to the starting rotation. If there's an opportunity to add that one more arm there, that would be great. So we still, and whether that be, you know, via free agency or trade, we're open to all avenues. But those are the things we'd still like to get done.
Is it peace of mind that you would want? Because I get it, but no other team is going to be able to make a move for these guys.
Well, I mean, yeah, part of it would be peace of mind. Part of it's being selfish and sitting there and knowing and being able to take a collective sigh of relief. I mean, just like with the Robbie Ray deal. You know, we were joking around. If they had not signed Robbie Ray and the only move that they had made is Adam Frazier, how would you feel right now?
Yeah.
And I would feel pretty frustrated, and I would feel very nervous about what this offseason ultimately is going to turn into for the Seattle Mariners. So, yeah, some of it's peace of mind. But the other part is I think it makes – I genuinely believe it sets them up to be even more successful with the final moves that they need to make heading into when the lockout is over and you're getting into spring training, because it makes them more focused, it makes them more hyper-focused on what they do. And look, these are pros. I'm not saying they can only be task-oriented and only focus on one thing at a time. I'm not sitting here and trying to be condescending that way. What I'm saying is that you can put even more effort into getting these other deals done. And when you can knock that thing off your list, you're not trying to do a million and one things at a time. You are focused on what is next on my board. Okay, what trade can I be even more engaged in trade conversations? Can I be even more engaged in trying to negotiate a deal with a Chris Bryant afterwards, or a Seiya Suzuki, or someone along those lines? I mean, I just think it makes the picture more clear for the Mariners and the path that they need to go on to continue to improve their roster.
Now, I wouldn't be paying this much mind were it not for Buster Olney's tweet early this morning at 7 a.m. He says there were rumblings amongst agents last night that the Mariners were working on a third baseman signing. The best available left side infielders are Correa, who I think we can rule out, Story, and Bryant. We've heard the Mariners are certainly interested in Chris Bryant. We've also heard, though, this is a slightly older report, that Bryant may not want to sign until after the CBA deal is done.
Right. But it also wouldn't surprise me if money talks and if you get the right deal in front of him that he would be willing to sign. I mean, there was also a lot of talk beforehand, Stacey, before this month began, that, or just as it began, that, hey, you know, business as usual for all these teams. They're not going to be doing, you know, crazy deals right now. I mean, they're not going to be rushed to do it. And then what do we witness?
Right.
We saw this free agency just completely.
The Rangers were like, oh, we aren't.
Yeah, just completely blister. And, I mean, it was going crazy. Max Scherzer gets one of the richest deals in Major League Baseball history in terms of average per year. I mean, it was insane. And so I look at that, and I think anything is possible for the Mariners. And quite frankly, it gives me a lot of excitement that Buster Olney went out with that tweet, that John Morosi and others were saying that they were engaged in conversations with Bryant and Trevor Story yesterday. So if they've been engaged in talks for, you know, a while and things are heating up, it leads to the opportunity of maybe pulling something off by the end of the day.
Now, Jake, you are obviously really, really hoping they will, though had your doubts when we were in our hype train segment earlier. I said, hey, Mariners make another move before today's 9 p.m. Pacific time deadline. You said, I don't know. I don't think so. Curtis, you said yes. Why?
Well, I mean, we just saw Chris Taylor go off the board. It's not out of the realm of possibility that these guys can sign and get a physical done with these teams before the clock strikes midnight Eastern tonight. And I would imagine the Mariners have had conversations with both Chris Bryant and Trevor Story, or else they wouldn't be in these rumors from all of these power brokers amongst MLB newsbreakers. Like, that's just how it, like, I just don't see a world in which the Mariners let Chris Bryant or Trevor Story continue on in free agency here, where, you know, whether it be now or after the CBA gets bargained here. I just think the Mariners have realized that there is an urgency here, and the Robbie Ray signing started that. That signified the start of their offseason, basically. And they know that they can't just settle with that. That can't be the last move, the last big move that this team makes. Maybe there's a trade, too. Who knows? But I think Trevor Story makes the most sense of the two right now. I think he's got he's got more power in his bat than Chris Bryant does, which is saying a lot because Chris Bryant can hit some bombs, but Trevor Story can really hit some bombs. I think Trevor Story is the guy that the Mariners should be focusing in on. And look, if Buster only saying that there's a possibility of a third baseman coming to Seattle, yeah. And he said that last night.
He said that this morning. This morning, he said there were rumblings last night. The Mariners were working on this deal.
So there's still time. There's still 7.5 hours to go.
Come on.
Look what you did. You made Jake a believer.
Good. I think
you got me back. Can we do hype trade again? Do it again?
No, we cannot. We're not. We're going to do what I need to know.
Also, hold on. Before we go to what I need to know, I love a conspiracy theory, and the 425 has a great one.
Oh, I love it.
What if all along, in the guise of going and helping children and high school athletes, really the reason why Ichiro is actually in Japan is to recruit Seiya Suzuki?
Ooh.
Boom!
Let's go.
The 425, you're a genius.
Love the
idea
of Ichiro hiding behind the idea of helping children in order to recruit for the Mariners.
I mean, it's all possible. It's all possible.
All right. What I need to know is coming your way next. Get your questions in, any single question you have, to the Mac and Jack's text line. You can text it to 206-421-3776. Your questions are next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Have we just all decided to bully me? Is that just the vibe of the show? That Curtis
what
and
are you
Jake,
talking about?
Curtis and Jake gang up on
you,
me?
You took a huge
like
shot at
like a form of brothers that I didn't ask for,
you took a
nor
massive,
want.
You took a massive shot at me in headline rewrites.
What? A shot at all. Instead, someone's got your back here. They said on What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric, our dear, sweet, young, beautiful Stacy. Thank you. How are you holding up after Maura Dooley was personally asked to apply for Love is Blind and you were not?
Whoa.
Wow. All right.
This is incredibly awkward because this question will eat at Stacy for life.
No, I personally hope that Maura does do the show. I'm her biggest cheerleader, and also mm-hmm. I think that she would be amazing. She would become a fan favorite. I'm like absolutely convinced.
You're convinced?
I think I would be a villain.
See, here's the thing. I just don't know if Maura is very, very put together in
yeah,
the
she's
best
not messy
way.
Enough.
She's not messy. Great reality show and for something like Love is Blind, you need somebody that
those are the people that become famous, like Jessica. But the people that are successful, like who is the couple that like everyone loves?
Cameron and Lauren.
They're normal people. Not on this show. If you're normal, I think you're good for this show.
Are they normal though?
Yes. Yes.
Amber and
they're not
Barnett are not
yeah.
normal.
They are definitely not normal.
They are living in holy matrimony.
The audacity.
They
are. So the audacity.
Making it work. I hope Maura does it too. That would be so much fun. But also at the same time, like what if some dude like breaks her heart? That'd be
and I'll break his legs.
Yeah,
you kay. Heard me. You heard it here.
Okay, all right. Well,
Curtis,
you said to the
you
world.
Can go back
so
and delete
knows.
That from the podcast just in case for legal reasons. Thank you. What I need to know is Russell Wilson the right fit for Waldron's system, or is a new OC inevitable?
Oh man, fantastic question.
Thanks. I didn't.
It
come
is.
Up with it, but I'm taking credit.
It is a situation that I believe there are so many factors going on behind the scenes that it's just one giant mess. Like, in some degree, I feel so incredibly bad for Shane Waldron. First year as a play caller in the NFL, and on paper, it should be an amazing situation for him. But, man, the dynamic is incredibly hard, and it is challenging. And so I do believe that the system actually does fit Russell Wilson. I do believe that it is something that can be incredibly positive and that the marriage between Russ and Shane Waldron could be positive. But Russell hasn't played up to his ability since the injury. I think that Shane Waldron is working through a lot of you know, struggles for his first time. And also, you have an offensive line that has drastically underperformed this season that has been a huge problem to all of it. And so I think that this has been an incredibly challenging year for Shane Waldron, and obviously you're the offensive coordinator. You're the guy. And I don't know if he's going to be given another opportunity to show what he can do with the Seahawks after this year. I don't know that. But I do think he is fully capable, and I just think that this has been an incredibly challenging year, more so than we ever anticipated.
What I need to know with the lockout expected in MLB, will there be spring training? It sounds like the latest from USA Today was that both sides have a soft deadline of getting something done in early February, like February 1st, which would keep spring training intact, although that's also not guaranteed. There are obviously a chance that negotiations continue and that they don't come to an agreement. But what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that.
I think there's got to be at least some kind of ramp-up period before the season starts.
One would think.
Maybe it's like how it was a couple of years ago when you had the summer camps.
Oh, yes, that's right. Man, that was rough. Yeah. I mean, here's
yes.
Here's the thing that drives me nuts.
Remember the 2020 season?
Yeah.
Oh.
During COVID?
Yeah, where it's like, oh, man, Jared Kelnick hit three home runs against
I thought you guys
Mariners
were talking
pitching.
About, yeah. I thought you guys were talking about, like, back in the day when we were in school that you would have a summer camp to ramp up. And I was like, why wasn't I invited?
Missed a whole chunk of the context of that situation. Stacey's having nightmares about summer camp all over
God.
Again. I would really be frustrated with both Major League Baseball and the Players Union if they stretch this to the point where you are legitimately pushing back the season. You're legitimately pushing back spring training. Maybe not as big of a deal, just maybe not a huge chunk of spring training. But come on, you've got months. You're telling me you can't get this resolved in a matter of months? You know what the sticking points are. Let's figure this out and let's get it done. Let's go. Let's move on. And don't you dare mess this up for the Seattle Mariners. I'm warning you right now, Major League Baseball and Players Union, or else.
You told them, Jake.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of, what I need to know, Jake, this one
don't
for
ruin
you.
This for me.
Would you rather have Correa, Trevor, or Chris, and why? Carlos Correa, Trevor Story, Chris Bryant.
I mean, is that really a question?
That literally is a question. I'm staring at it right now.
Well,
I mean, can we all three agree that we would pick Carlos Correa
in
a heartbeat?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Correa is the clear
Let's
answer
not overthink
here.
This.
Yeah, I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous. But we know that Correa is not going to be a potential for the Mariners here because they've already committed to J.P. Crawford, and they are not willing to budge off of that. So, outside of that, I mean, I have been a big fan of Chris Bryant and the possibility of that. But Curtis, you're getting me more excited about Trevor Story. And when you think about Trevor Story here to the Mariners, and yes, his power and all that is really intriguing, but he's got a great glove. And the other thing that is really underrated about him that people don't really talk enough about is the fact that this guy's incredibly athletic. Like, he is a guy that can steal bases and can be a factor on the base paths as well as everything else that he does. So, I mean, he's really, I wouldn't say he's a totally complete player because he's got his question marks and he's got to prove that. But, I mean, he has the potential to be a complete player for you.
Yeah, there's 7 hours left for a story to be written. Hi, I'm Jared Ant of CBS Sports.
Yeah, Curtis sounded pretty determined that this could happen. That was your hype train.
Let's go. Trevor
Story. We'll see. You get bragging rights.
Here are, please.
I promise, Curtis. I promise tomorrow we will lead off the show by thanking you.
You're welcome.
And giving you bragging rights.
Speak it into existence.
That's exactly right. All right. This has been Jake and Stacey for Jake Heaps for Curtis Rogers. I'm Stacey Ross. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.